Welcome to Digital Stratosphere, the podcast that helps organizations throughout the world with their digital transformation journeys. Here, you will find independent and technology agnostic advice with no software vendor sales spin to help you make the best decisions for your organization. Whether you are in the process of selecting technology, in the midst of your transformation, or trying to get your initiative back on track, Digital Stratosphere provides expertise and best practices to help.
Hello, and welcome to Digital Stratosphere, the podcast that provides independent and technology agnostic advice to help organizations through their digital transformation journeys. My name is Kyler Cheatham, and I am your host today. Joining me to talk software contract renewals and negotiations and some other vendor areas you should focus on when it comes to contracts is Director of Strategy and Transformation, Nate Stroher. So welcome, Nate.
Thank you, Kyler.
So today we're going to kind of get into that very relevant piece, especially coming into the end of the year, just to talk about how you either negotiate a new contract or look through contract renewals, things like that. So with that, let's just go ahead and jump in. Can you kind of take us through the process in which you would receive a contract from a vendor? Is that at the end of your selection, or is it at the end of a specific time period when it comes to your relationship with a software vendor?
Yeah, so the contract is the end of a roughly anywhere from a 2 to 3 month process of a software platform selection. So by the time we get to the contract piece of the software negotiations, and the by the time we are negotiating these contracts, we've already gone through and we've developed a list of standard requirements for our client. The vendor has come in and not only told us how they're going to satisfy those requirements, but they've shown us through the vendor demos and through follow-up sessions and one-on-ones with the client just exactly how their technology is going to help our client in the future. We've also gone through an RFP process where the software vendors have filled out a beginning with a high level overview of roughly their licensing agreement, their cost, the time to implement, and the terms of their contract. And throughout the RFP and the demo and the negotiation process, we're narrowing those prices, terms, and implementation times down to where we get to a final answer with the software contract that we're negotiating.
Gotcha. That makes sense. It sounds kind of complicated, so let's break it down a little bit. Is it normal to have more than one vendor involved in the contracting phase?
For the most part, the software vendors, and there's no set answer. So I'll say that at the beginning, because as soon as you say that a software vendor will only work with third-party implementation providers, we hear of a vendor that will only deal with their own. So it varies back and forth. But for the most part, software, the Oracles, the NetSuites, the Microsoft Dynamics, the Acumaticas of the world will team up with implementation providers who will be either a reseller of their software or will work with the vendors who will sell you the software directly. And then the implementation partners will be that third party that comes in and helps the client implement their software, set up their software. They'll help them to go through and set up all of their ancillary systems to interact with the new software. So it's really kind of they're kind of six and a half, one half dozen. Some of the software companies will work only directly with their implementation providers. Some will only team with third parties, and and anywhere in between is usually what we find for our clients.
Gotcha. I love the classic consultant answer, it depends. I always love to call out our colleagues on that, because that comes up every time we have an episode, which is excellent. So it sounds like, based off what you said, there's a few different entities involved sometimes in one contracting phase. You can have the actual software vendor, you can have implementation partners. And then what about some other people or entities that might play into that space with contracting?
So I think the most important, which I alluded to a little bit earlier, is any of the ancillary systems that you are including in these implementations. Quite often, and I think we probably have about 4 projects going right now where we are implementing a new ERP package and the client already has a CRM package in place. So it's really important that we work closely with the technology that's in place that will interact with the new system that we're implementing, and also any systems that we're implementing that we know about that are going to be implemented in the future. So if a client has chosen a new ERP package and they know that in a year from now, they're going to implement a new CRM package, we want to make sure to get them involved as well. That's probably a little less involvement than a technology that's already in place, but we want to make sure that we're setting up the new software to interact and automate with the software that's either in place or is going to be in place, take all care of all the technical issues, and really more importantly, go ahead and make sure that we include all the configuration questions and answers to the new technology or the technology that'll be in place in the future, so we don't back ourselves into a corner, get an ERP put in place or whatever platform we put in place, and then 6 months down the road, start to implement a new technology and find out that we've limited ourselves with the functionality that we can take advantage of.
Right. So that should all be outlined in the contract, those integrations.
Exactly. When they're known. And again, it's in some cases, it's hard to know. We know we're implementing a new CRM package. We don't know what exactly it is, but it is important to note whatever you do know. And even if you have unknowns that you at least know that there is going to be change in the future, you want to make sure and note those in the contract as well.
Absolutely. And when it comes to the vendors that you might be well known with, you mentioned Oracle, maybe SAP, those types of systems, is it worth looking at maybe some tier 2 systems within your evaluation phase? When it comes to contracting, are they sometimes easier to contract with? Or what does that look like as far as vendor variety?
Yeah, I think it's important to look at all the software solutions out there. And this is another very on the fence, it depends type answer. But there really is no set solution there. I think we all agree on the fact that there are certain businesses that need to look at a tier 1 software just simply because of size and magnitude and what their business is. That you don't want to be looking at anything other than the biggest software solutions for those organizations. Beyond that, it really helps to not only look at the tier that you're in, but a tier down and look at all the opportunities to partner up with these software vendors that might be more up and coming, that might be willing to make some deals to get into a new industry, might have been purchased by a venture capital group, or might have been purchased by an existing software platform that are hungry to get into your industry or hungry to get into your size business.
Interesting. I love that you brought up kind of the mergers and acquisitions and private equity piece of that, because that can be involved in a lot of contracting when you have to kind of match systems or right size what's best for that area. So when it comes to costs, because obviously that's always the forefront of contracting, is how much is this actually going to cost? What are some pieces that our audience or community should be aware of when reviewing their contract to make sure there's no kind of sneaky hidden costs in there?
Yeah, I think the number one most important thing to always consider, which we start off all really from our business development life cycle all the way through to when a client becomes a client and when we're helping them negotiate the contract, is what does the contract look like in the future? Oftentimes people get really excited, or clients get really excited, when they look at a price and a NetSuite or an Acumatic or whoever the vendor that they're working with comes in and say they come in with a really high 1 and 2 year cost, whereas another vendor will come in and really lowball and they'll say, hey, you know, why would I put $1 million into this technology when I can get something that's going to probably help me out for $500,000? The most important thing to look at is what is the lifetime cost of that contract? What are the implementation costs of that contract? But really, most important out of all of that is what are the terms that you can add to that contract in the future as you grow, as you expand, as your business line deepens potentially into new fields, into new service lines, that sort of thing. So to really sum it up, I think the most important thing to look at is always look at not only the contract that you're signing, but where are you in position to the next contract you're going to sign as far as rate increases, adding new users, adding new functionality, new modules, new bolt-on attachments, that sort of thing.
Right. And so when it comes to these new or newish, I would say, models of subscription fees, when we talk about kind of cloud hosting versus on-premise hosting, what are things to look out for when you're maybe switching that environment?
You know, I think the really important thing you need to look at is for many of our clients, the cloud is a new arena they're entering into. So it's really easy when you are going from an on-prem solution to another on-prem solution. You know, and you're familiar with the cost, with the maintenance, with the facilities that you have to have in place, and with, you know, you're just really comfortable with the environment that an on-prem solution is. When you go to a cloud solution, there's other things that you need to consider. You're going to have a different skill set with your IT group. Your IT group now doesn't need so much to manage a physical system. They need to manage that cloud environment. They need to work closely with the vendor. So it's also really important when you think about like an on cloud or an in the cloud solution versus an on-prem solution. You have the upgrades, you have the version control, you have, in an on-prem solution, you're in charge of when you do your upgrades, you're in charge of what version you have running. With an in the cloud solution, it's often dictated in the contract when those upgrades will happen, what version you'll be required to keep to, and that's really taken out of your hands and put into the vendor's hand. There's a lot of benefits to that, but then there's also a discipline that is forced upon a company when they enter a new environment that they're not used to and they've never dealt with in the past. So it's really not anything that's new. It's not anything that's too difficult. It's just an unfamiliar arena that most of the companies have not worked in before.
So kind of a new area to just, you know, be mindful of when you go through the process of contracting, it sounds like.
Exactly. Yeah.
And when we talk about who should be involved in the contracting from an internal stakeholder perspective, who do you usually recommend looks at that contract during that negotiation phase?
At a high level, and I'll just kind of go through the different levels, you obviously, first and foremost, need to have all the input from the different operations individuals giving you a really accurate forecast of where their headcount is today and where they feel that their headcount is going to be in 2 years, 5 years, and 10 years down the road. Those obviously are a lot harder to predict as you get further down the road, but it's really good to know how many users we're going to have, how we're going to use the system today, and how we're going to use that in the future. Then I would say the next level up, you really need heavy involvement from the CFO and the head of IT. And those are the two that are going to really be driving this whole process through. And they're going to be the champions of the new technology. They're going to be the ones that are creating the total cost of ownership packages. They're going to be presenting to the executive steering committee or whoever the final decision makers are, a plan that says not only here's what the software is going to cost, here's all the things that this software effects as we implement it going forward. So there's going to be some cost savings with some systems that you don't need anymore. There's going to be some increased cost from new interactions with the platforms that you already have in place. There's going to be renewal costs. There's going to be maintenance costs. Even with on the cloud technology, you still need to consider that you have to get to the cloud. You have to have, the individual users need their connectivity, be it at remote working or in the office. So there's just all those different pieces that the CFO and the head of IT need to factor into that total cost of ownership. And then finally, there's that approval level that's either the executive sponsor or the executive sponsorship team that really comes through and makes that final go, no go decision on whether the technology needs to be implemented and what exactly they're willing to approve for future expansion.
Wow, that was a great overview. Very detailed. Thank you so much for giving us that insight. It sounds like it definitely is a process within an organization to just make sure there is alignment around those contracting. So we're going to dive into how to actually negotiate with vendors right after a quick break, and we will be right back.
If you are involved in any sort of digital transformation or business change initiative, you will want to download the 2021 Digital Transformation Report. With its comprehensive overview of business and technology trends and best practices, this report is a must-have guide for any transformation project or executive team. Download this free report by visiting Third Stage Consulting at thirdstage-consulting.com. You can also visit our website to learn more about us or download independent reports, videos, and other best practices. Again, visit thirdstage-consulting.com today to learn how to take your transformation to the third stage of success.
Welcome back to Digital Stratosphere, the podcast about independent and agnostic technology digital transformation advice. I am Kyler Cheatham, your host, speaking with Nate Stroher from Third Stage Consulting Group. Nate, welcome back.
Thanks.
You bet. So let's get into some of kind of the myths about software negotiation on more of the vendor side. So starting at the beginning, can you negotiate with a software vendor, or is it kind of like what you get in the price?
Yeah, I think it's safe to say that there's probably about 95% of the software contract that there is room for negotiation. There are terms and conditions. There are certain things within the contract that corporations and the software providers are not going to budge on. But those are really, those are really going to be that same 5% probably across all the different platforms that you're working with. So we always like to say that pretty much everything is up for negotiation. And we're in a competitive environment, even today with all the crazy changes that we're going through. It still is a competitive environment. It still is a sales-based environment, and there's always room for negotiation.
Well, that's good news. I think that's kind of music to everyone's ears. So what are some tactics that vendors utilize to kind of put some pressure on that negotiation? For example, one I know from kind of being newer to the industry is just that quarter or that year-end close that they really try and push on, hey, you have this deal until the end of the month, that type of thing. What are some other tactics that you can kind of let our audience into that they might be able to utilize or at least be aware of when it comes to vendor negotiation tactics?
I think the key is that you need to look at the contract as kind of almost two different pieces. Obviously, first and foremost is the implementation cost, the first year licensing cost, and really the first part of your contract that's in place. And that really is something, that the implementation cost is a one-time cost. You implement the software, you configure the software, you get it ready for go live.
and that cost is done. That's not a recurring cost. But then you have your recurring cost as far as number of users, upgrade cost, version cost, that sort of thing, that is really kind of the second part of the contract. So it's really important to say, you know, I want to try and get the lowest price I can for this one-time implementation cost, and for even for this first term of the contract, which could be anywhere from 1 to 5 years. But then really more importantly, say, can I give up certain parts of that first piece of that contract to ensure that I'm not 5 and 6 years down the road locked into a contract or locked into price increases that are really going to be detrimental if I grow? And for the most part, clients are usually implementing an ERP system because they plan on growing. So you always have to consider, this is a contract for today based on the business that I'm running today, but I plan to be twice as big as I am tomorrow. So now I need to think about what are those costs going to be, and how am I going to be able to negotiate with that vendor now that I'm twice as big and their software is already in place.
Right. That future state is so important to identify even in kind of every step of this process. So when it comes to the actual contract, what are some other kind of red flag areas you should be aware of when you're reviewing your contract?
You know, I think that we talked about the number of users. We talked about how the any configuration changes, if you want to purchase any bolt-on applications, you want to make sure that you add flexibility for that. You want to make sure that upfront there's agreement on if we choose these packages or if we choose to add different modules within our ERP package, just exactly what those costs will be. They might not give you an exact dollar amount, but you can say, you know, based on the pricing today, which is X, Y, and Z, we want to lock in a rate that would be no more than 5% increase every year up until we implement it. So for example, if you want to have a shipping module added to your ERP package, you might say, you know, today it's $10 a user. We might not implement it for another 3 years. So can you guarantee that in 3 years, that $10 per user won't climb more than 30% once we actually choose to implement it?
And this sounds kind of, again, complex. So how can clients or our community of listeners invest in making sure that their contract is actually correct, in being that some small to mid-sized businesses may have never gone through a software type of contract before?
Well, I think this is where we talk about some of the biggest value add for third stages involvement with a software selection and implementation. And it's really, we're able to, since we've been through these contract negotiations so often, we're able to look at the contract. Well, first of all, we're working with the vendor throughout the selection, the demonstration, the RFP, and then finally the write-up of the first contract. And then we're really able to go back to our clients and say, you know, these are the three or four areas that you really want to focus on when you're writing up the contract. And it doesn't need to be a confrontational relationship. This is also working along with these vendors to say, you know, that the vendor's been on this journey with you and your client throughout the process. So it's really, you know, they're in the you want to put them in the best position to succeed and to get this contract if your client chooses to work with them. And then you also want it to make it beneficial for your client. So it doesn't have to be an adversarial position, but you really want to set your client up for the certain areas of the contract that you know can potentially change in the future that will represent those biggest price variances going forward.
Yeah. And maybe thinking about it as a due diligence type of initiative, and just making sure that contract is solid. And speaking of, you know, the solidity of the contract, have you seen implementations fail because of contracting issues?
Oh, absolutely. And I think, I think it's probably, there's a host of reasons, and we are often brought in kind of after the fact from these failed selections, and I'll call it a failed selection because if you get to the negotiation stage and you don't have a contract, you're back to square one as far as the selection. But I think really that there's a lot of different areas, but probably the top one or two areas is that you haven't been working lockstep with the vendors and with the client from the beginning to go through the RFP to make sure that that how the vendor is answering the questions in the RFP truly represents the environment that you're trying to create. And so, you know, the more you're working lockstep with the three of you, the client, the vendor, and yourself to make sure that everyone's on the same page and you're talking about here's what the client wants, here's what the vendor can offer, here's what it's going to cost, here's what it looks like. The more you do that, the more you eliminate the risk of, or not eliminate, but the more you mitigate the risk of coming to a contract and your client has gotten all excited. They've really chosen the software that they think's the best based on a set of assumptions. The vendor comes in and says, you know what, here's our pricing, here's our terms, and it's nowhere close to what you've been telling them all along.
Oh, wow. That's scary. Sounds scary.
Yeah. I kind of compare it to, you know, when you go to a car dealer and you first walk in and you tell them sort of what you want, what your budget is, and what you're looking for in a car. They go and put you in a much nicer car. You go, you drive that car, you get excited, it's everything you want. Then you go to sign the contract, or you go to buy the car, and they say, oh, that car's $75,000. And you say, well, I told you my budget was 40. And then, you know, then you're back to square one. Then everything right. that you've done to look at the new car is null and void. You have to really go back and say, okay, now let's start again. Let's start at 40. Here's what I can spend. Here's what I need.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I know at Third Stage, you and team do a lot of expert witness engagements or help with that litigation. How does the contract affect some of your work as an expert witness?
Well, I think probably a lot of what we see again, it depends, but I think a lot of what we see, if you had to look at a lot of why these things fail or why we're brought in the first place for these third-party witnesses is that there really weren't clearly laid out contracts in the first place. It wasn't, you know, I always say if you have a bunch of assumptions going into a contract, put them in the contract. If it's assumed, it's worthy of being documented and it's worthy of being a part of the contract. So, you know, what I alluded to earlier is we think we're going to be selecting a new CRM package in the next 2 to 3 years. Mm-hmm. Note that in the contract. It doesn't have any bearing on pricing or anything else, but it needs to be a part of the contract so that you know that down the road when you tell a vendor, hey, by the way, you know, this software now needs to be compatible to this new CRM that we talked about, they know that's a part of the contract. So I think we're really, if I had to say, probably one of the biggest reasons we're ever brought in is that the contracts are just poorly written. Mm-hmm. They're based too much on assumptions. They're based too much on history of people that aren't there anymore that wrote the contracts. And so, you know, just document and over document and assume nothing.
Make no assumptions. Got it.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, this is not an assumption because this is a fact. This was an awesome conversation. I really appreciate all of your insights. And for our audience here, if they want to get more information on software selection or contracting, what resources would you suggest for them?
I think that the first is to go out and we have a lot of really good videos at Third Stage Consulting that will run you through some of the do's and don'ts of this type process, some of the things to look for, you know, and this is also a negotiation. So there's 10,000 negotiation books. You should always have sort of that negotiation strategy in the back of your pocket. But I think it's really there's a lot of valuable resources that Third Stage offers that you could go look at the videos, contact any one of us to talk through some of your challenges. And then also, I think it's really important that organizations, before they even get to the selection and before they even start to consider a project like this, it's really important that everyone is on the same page as far as where they are and where they want to be. That vision doesn't need to be locked down 100%. You know, to a T, signed and dotted the I's and the T's, but everyone needs to be fairly certain that they're all operating on the same set of assumptions, that they're all aiming for the same goal, and they all have the same outcome in mind as far as where they want to be. If you don't have that, if you're not really in lockstep as far as where you are and where you want to be, you're setting yourself up for failure before you even start.
Absolutely. Well, that's great advice. Thank you so much again for being here today. We do put out new episodes every Wednesday and pre-recorded episodes on Mondays and Fridays. So please subscribe to our channel here at Digital Stratosphere, and our sister podcast, Ground Control, also comes out with our longer form episodes every Wednesday. So thank you so much for listening, and we will see you next time.
Learn more about us. Download independent reports, videos, and other best practices at thirdstage-consulting.com.